You're kind of quiet, Robert.
It's a Thursday night, 11 May, 2100 Eastern. It's the Committee of Safety meeting, and it's been requested that we start it right on time tonight, and so that's what we're doing, and now I turn it over to the leaders. Have at it.
All righty. Good evening, everybody, and welcome. Tonight, Nikki's going to share her wisdom on Robert's Rules of Order and what we should and shouldn't use and why and all that kind of good stuff. So with no further ado, I turn it over to Nikki.
Ooh, that quick, huh? Okay.
Pretty good, huh? I'm out of here. See you later. Bye.
No, don't go any. Don't go too far.
Don't go. Don't leave me.
Okay. Where I'm going to start with this is that if you go to the webpage for National Liberty Alliance Committees of Safety, you will be able to find pretty much all the links that I mentioned. And apparently John had, Captain John, who just spoke, he gave, you know, okay, the thumbs up to it. So here I go. And we were going to go through the Committee of Safety and the startup rules for the Committee of Safety and what it says in the handbook. This is what we were going to go through. However, you know, when we started looking at the table of contents, it had to get narrowed down. And Robert's Rules of Order seems to be kind of like what we need, because in the Committee of Safety Handbook on page 5, you will see that the National Liberty Alliance came into being because our elected servants were ignoring the Constitution for the United States, which was ordained by, we were told, we the people. Us, but we're beginning to wonder now. Okay, so in our endeavor to establish a way that we the people might exercise our consent of governance, could people mute out, please? Our consent of governance, we discovered that we the people had two processes for consent that our founding fathers used to frame our nation. These were passed to their posterity and were, now notice, you know, their posterity. Were we part of that posterity? I don't know at this particular point. Nonetheless, we have to take back what we were told. Otherwise, it's an unconscionable and adhesive contract that we have been duped into accepting. So number one is the political process. Through the committees of safety, that morphed into the elect committeemen, and George Washington called the engines of our government, or George Washington called the engines of our government. That's the political process. Now, remember, the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, it says, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to, number one, and it doesn't have the number one there, but put it in there, is to dissolve the political bands which connected them to another. The political bands have connected us to the bankers. Just like in the first century, the political bands connected them, which were the Pharisees and the Sadducees back then, connected them to the money changers. Our money was changed in 1965, so we are in the same place today as maybe our ancestors were back in the first century. Number two is the judicial process. This is on page 5 again of the Committee of Safety Handbook. Through unfettered grand and trial juries that in a stunning 6-3 decision, whereas Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belong to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government governed and administered to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. And the first right in the Bill of Rights, the first number one, is the right to assemble and redress grievances. That ties in with assembly of the people, based on the committees of safety going into their local government or into their state or federal government and saying, hey, look, you know, we're here. Okay, so National Liberty Alliance has already assembled and educated thousands of people across America in a grand and trial jury administration process, whereas four people in every county will take their constitutional position separate from the politically controlled judiciary and prosecutor. That goes along with number two in that Declaration of Independence. Assume amongst the powers of the earth that separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle us. When we think of laws of nature and nature's God, we think of the Ten Commandments. They covet what we have. They lie to us. They bear false witness against us. That's what the gentleman was saying earlier. They murder, they steal, and most of all, they have on their currency, in God we trust. And they pledge allegiance, or they have us pledge allegiance to one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And yet, at his breaking of the third commandment, they are hypocrites because they are using that in vain when they're stealing, lying, cheating, and so on and so forth. So, therefore, whereas four people in every county shall take their constitutional positions, and there has to be some sort of leadership, and hopefully that this will be developing the leadership for the committees of safety, which will morph into everything that the government was promised, that we were promised by this government. This assembly of people is poised in all 50 states to simply await a critical mass as we continue to assemble. The assembling of the committees of safety across America will reign in that critical mass needed. Time is short, and our success will require everyone, commitment, support, and time. And it says your commitment, support, and time, but it's everyone's. Okay, so with that said, like I said, for your convenience, in preparation for this upcoming discussion, the one that we're on now, on Robert's Rules, the PDF links for the various versions of Robert's Rules and the First Amendment's 2014 comment about Robert's Rules relevant to the assemblies are pasted below, and that is in the comment section. And I put this in here because whoever considers themselves or goes by the acronym or the name First Amendment, on Tuesday, the 11th day of April, it looks, or could be November 4th, 2014, posted, although I am a general fan of Robert's Rules of Order, I have seen this abused by localities throughout the nation. Open time for the public to speak on topics that will affect the locality. I have seen speakers take a serious beating and get removed. Though, wait a minute, hang on a minute. Okay, now I can see that better. Okay, be removed as though that speaking time is actual law. Robert's Rules of Order is not law, just recommendations for civil meetings. When a person is speaking and the issue that person is speaking on, time should be extended if the matter is pressing and important to the people. Tyrants will block sound presentations by the people. On the other side of that coin, people also need to know that if they believe their presentation will go beyond the normally prescribed time frame, arrangements can be made in advance to do so with a local administrator who will make the proper arrangements for you to do so. Okay, now I have heard people talk, people who understand Robert's Rules and right down to the brass tacks, I mean, they really understand it beyond my comprehension anyway at this particular point in time. So what this couple did, they went into their local township meeting and one started to talk on an issue that was serious in that particular township, and they the supervisor said, hey, you know, you overstepped your time. That's it. You know, sit down. And his wife stood up, and she raised her hand, and she says, I yield my time. And they got through it, okay? So it's knowing not necessarily what your limitations are, but how to get past those limitations. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Are there any questions so far? Do you think this is meeting your expectations and realities that you need?
Hey, Nikki.
Yes.
David from Missouri. I've been in organizations, committees before that used Robert's Rules of Order, and I'm not saying it'll happen here, but it seems like there's a lot of resistance by people because they're just not familiar with the processes a lot. And if I'm understanding you right, you're wanting to use that on the calls or in the weekly calls?
This is strictly to just acquaint people with Robert's Rules because it is in the COS handbook. Okay? And it is fundamental to all of us in one way or the other because
I think it's great.
Yeah.
But
I know. But I hope that that explains where it's coming from tonight.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll just toss it here, Dave. In the passages that were for our reading, for our meeting, we make it quite clear that, you know, Robert's Rules of Orders is a guide, and you don't have to get into a stickler too much. And Nikki and I's presentation, our bent is the intent rather than the letter of the rules. But you have to be familiar with these so that you can function in these public bodies that we wish to address. So that's our presentation for tonight. It's pretty clear in the documents that that she posted.
Oh,
and with that, I yield.
That is good clarification, too. Thank the both of you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, too. Yeah, yeah, you show up at your meeting, they have to do that. That's correct. I yield. Thank you.
Okay. All right. What I'm going to do, okay, is to realize where the committees of safety are coming from and to point out some of the issues that were learned or the lessons that were learned when Harney, a county came, Oregon came forward. And this was brought to my attention by Robert when the committees of safety started coming forward here with the NLA. And there is a website, it's called libertyunderattack.com, and in there is learning from the lessons learned in Harney County, Oregon. Okay? And there's four lessons that apparently were learned, and I'm going to read them not to point blame at anybody or shame anybody, but just to point out that these things happen when people, you know, come together. There's always that working through. There is group dynamics, come to is that there is the coming together, and then there is the storming and the norming and then the performing. Okay. So that's group dynamics in a nutshell. There's something else that goes along with that, but definitely there's the storming. Nobody trusts one another. You know, they all think they know it all and so on and so forth. And then there's the norming. I got a little bit of information. Let's kind of take that and run with it and, you know, kind of vet it out and so on and so forth. And then there's the performing. And that's where we hope to get to with these committees of safety, I would hope. So anyway, learning from the lessons learned in Harney County, Oregon. Number one, the most significant lesson to be learned, in our opinion, and this is the writer and, I didn't put his name down here. Okay. The most significant lesson to be learned, in our opinion, is the importance of vetting. Though unlike the Meet the Judge event in October 16, 2015, and of course I wasn't there, okay? The Outsiders didn't bust up the pre-existing Patriot Group. Instead, they facilitated in forming one, which is noticeably more positive, okay? However, stubborn refusal to leave upon request by the Harney County Committee of Safety demonstrated that he, somebody else, did not care about the concept as part of the American tradition. In other words, the individual did not understand the lessons of history at that particular juncture of time. So this is kind of like the storming phase, okay? Secondly, was mentioned previously, and you'd have to read the whole thing, a newly created Patriot Group, they simply do not have the experience or wisdom to gauge the proper course of action to de-escalate the crisis. So they were not gifted in, or not gifted necessarily, but they were not aware of
how depending on how quick this moves, I could be starting by the...
You could be doing what? David?
I apologize. I should have been muted.
Okay. For that was left to other patriots. Anyway, such as those in Portland, Oregon. Then finally, their handling of the press was subpar at best. Thirdly, there was a leaderless resistance is preferable to norm or formal organizations. Believe it or not, leaderless resistance is preferable to formal organizations. There is a long, mostly undocumented history of the negative ramifications that comes from these activist organizations, such as loss of privacy, doxing, or losing your job. The more these facts become documented and made publicly available, the better informed people will be in making their decisions on whether or not to join these organizations. So just realize a lot of people are kind of skeptical of joining organizations. However, there's Facebook, there's the other things on the internet, chat boards, and so on and so forth. Just walking in and passing out cards like John had discussed in other calls. Fourthly, and this is the first time, to our knowledge, is what this article says, of a flesh and blood Committee of Safety having a run-in with the established government, because there was no established government back in 1776 to speak of. As it was previously mentioned, and he goes into talking about Judge Grassi, that they, meaning the Committees of Safety, are not a legal group. So not a legal group, I mean, actually, they don't fall under any legal ramifications. So, there's some things to look at that particular site if you get around to it, okay? That's Liberty Under Attack. Okay, Robert, do you have anything more to say about that?
Well, they did have quite a few problems in the beginning, but they overcame those problems because they gathered and they discussed everything and they came to resolutions and they became much more organized group, and it was all the people of the county, and they grew, and I don't have a count of how many belongs to that county's COS right now, but the last I heard was 167, and they were still growing at that time. And because of what they went through, we have that information to help us get future COSs through the same problems. They're teaching us what we need to know.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, so what I put on... Oh, go ahead.
Two questions.
Sure.
I've tried to find the article that you were talking about. I went to Liberty Under Attack, and I can't track it down. Can you help me find it?
Just a second, and let me get back. Oh, I shut it down totally. What I'll do is I'll post it on the website. Okay, is that okay so that we don't take up time right now?
Where will you post it?
I'll post it to the comment section on the COS.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because I unfortunately, here, I've got it. Never mind, I do have it. Okay, it's libertyunderattack.com. That's all one word, no hyphens or anything. /origins, O-R-I-G-I-N-S, dash, Harney, H-A-R-N-E-Y, dash, County, C-O-U-N-T-Y, dash, Committee, C-O-M-M-I-T-T-E-E, dash, Safety, S-A-F-E-T-Y. Try that. Okay, so what I want to point out is that quite a few people think that, Robert's rules apply to all government, you know, as far as the Senate and the House of Representatives and so on and so forth. Well, the fact is that they all have rules, because in order to have compliance or put us into a specific mode of compliance where if we dare to, you know, wiggle one way or the other, we're going to be duly convicted of a crime, okay, there's rules, okay? That rules we have to abide by according and I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. The 13th Amendment allows for voluntary servitude with which, if you do not comply, you're going to be duly convicted of a crime. So these rules are important. This is important to them or us to know what their rules are, as it is for them to put rules on us that force us into compliance. They need to be made to comply with the rules that they make. Okay, that's why I gave that example of the woman whose husband was speaking, and she went ahead and raised her hand, and I yield my time. Okay, so they got around that particular rule that would have forced the issue that they were bringing before the township to, be just kind of swept under the table. Just by knowing what the rules are and forcing the compliance through use of their own rules. Make sense? So what I bring to your attention is that the U.S. Senate generally uses the legislative process, and they use pretty much all of them, I believe, use the Mason's Manual, okay? So if you get a hold of a Mason's Manual or you learn about the Mason's Manual, you will find that some of the houses throughout the country also use the Mason's Manual, but they also use the Jefferson's Manual. And when I talk about Mason, I'm not talking about the guild, you know, the Masonic guilds. I'm talking about Mason. That's was the fellow's name. Okay, historically. And you can get that information at the NCSL. That's the National Conference of States, okay? Legislatures, I should say. And that is ncsl.org. And if you go to their research, that's /research, you will be able to find a lot of really good information about how the states work and what manuals are used in your particular state so that you will know what to pull out to hold them to their rules. And I'm talking about state government now as well as the federal. All right? Okay, so in the National Conference of States, not Council, but Conference of States, okay, there's the article Using Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, The Advantages, to legislative bodies. So if your assembly is focused on, and I'm talking about your committees of safety, or if they're focus more on the state level than they are in the local level, in the township or the councils, they may want to know something about this and how it differs from Robert's Rules. So I'm going to read out of using Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, the advantages to legislative bodies, because it does mention the difference, and it defines the difference, or it tells the difference very good in this. Okay, Mason's Manual is the authority recognized by many state legislators. 70 of the 99 legislative chambers in the United States use Mason's Manual as their parliamentary authority. 13 use Jefferson's Manual, and only 4 use Robert's Rules of Order. So if you're one of the 4 states, you got it covered right there. However, if you are, you know, any of the others, then, you know, you've got to know something about this. The recent trend has been to move to Mason's Manual. Between 1991 and 1999, at least 10 legislative assemblies changed to or added Mason's as the backup to their chamber rules. Because so many chambers use Mason's, there is a wealth of assistance available in interpreting the manual. Also, the Mason's Manual Revision Commission continues to gather information from the states on current rulings and interpretations and will share this information with anyone having questions. Now, a good idea is to watch what kind of changes they're making so that they don't change it to the extent that it's not useful to us anymore, the people. Number 2, Mason's Manual is not a standard parliamentary manual. It is compiled to meet the particular needs of legislative bodies. So if they have to hide something, they just write it in the rules that they can hide it, right? So just be aware of those things. In fact, it is the only parliamentary manual designed specifically for state legislatures. Robert's Rules of Order were designed for civic groups and private organizations. We all probably have municipal corporations that we're dealing with. So I'm going to read that again. Robert's Rules of Order were designed for civic groups and private organizations to deal with bylaws, motions, and resolutions. Resolutions are not law. There is a difference between public bodies and private organizations. In a public body, the powers do not reside in the members themselves. State legislatures exercise the power that are delegated to them by the people. The organization and powers of a public body cannot be changed by its members. Any change must be made by the authority that created it, the people. Okay? It says by the authority that created it, and it has a hyphen, the people. Well, then we should be able to do something with this, right? The powers of voluntary associations arise from the agreement of the members. They are governed by contract. Now remember, the 13th Amendment says there shall be no involuntary servitude, comma, except if duly convicted of a crime in any place subject to their jurisdiction. And I'm kind of paraphrasing after that. And then Congress shall have the power to enforce voluntary servitude by appropriate legislation. So watch the wording of these things and realize that right here it says they are governed by contract. We are and they are. And they are impairing their obligation of contract to us. Otherwise, it is unconscionable and adhesive what they are doing. Also, the members of a private association speak for themselves. They represent no one. They are controlled by no outside power. Mason's was compiled by people who work in or with legislatures, and it is designed to deal with bills and other issues and problems that arise within the legislative environment. For example, Robert's Rules requires motions to be seconded, but Mason's does not. According to Masons, the effect of requiring a second to a motion is to require that no business can be presented except by two people, one who makes the motion and the other who seconds it. A member representing a constituency in a state legislature is entitled to present a matter for consideration of the body without having the support of a second, unless by rule or by law or by rule a second is required. So in other words, if you get enough people to sign something that you think ought to be a bill, you can present it to your legislator, and if they are following the rules, Mason's manual or even Jefferson's, they do not need it seconded by one of their own in order to bring it before and introduce it. Masons also discusses the concept of the election of officers, what constitutes a meeting, and how to waive the rules. It relies more on the use of simple majority, making it easier to conduct business. In addition, Masons contains sections on dealing with other branches of government, something not addressed in Roberts. Masons' manual has evolved from an exhaustive study of judicial decisions and legislative antecedents. It has been updated to keep the references current. It is the latest manual for up-to-date citations of case law and sources of authority. Mason's manual is arranged to facilitate the citation of authority, thereby giving more authority to the decisions it backs. It is extensively referenced and indexed. Other authors such as Cushing's, Hughes, Jefferson, Reed, Robert, and Sturgis are cited where references to their works will verify, and you can read that on your own when you have time. Number five, because Masons is designed for state legislatures, it addresses problems and concepts in the context that most legislators are likely to deal with them. Therefore, it is easier for legislators to understand and to use. Greater understanding leads to the proper application of the rules of procedure, which eliminates controversy, confusion, and litigation, and especially if we hold them to it. Greater understanding also makes public bodies more efficient in their work and more pleasant to work in. Number six, Mason's manual, it not only outlines what to do in certain instances, but it also tries to help you understand the theory behind why you do it that way. If legislators understand why something is being done in a particular instance, they are better able to translate that knowledge to another similar but unrelated situation. And we the people, once we understand that it's not all Robert's rules, that there is other guidelines, other manuals, other rules, regulations, and so on and so forth to work with, can direct our legislators in how to handle particular situations when they come about. Any questions? Comments?
Pretty powerful stuff. I'm loving it.
Thank you. I mean for it to happen. I mean, everything you want to know about Robert's Rules in like six or eight different versions, from the most simple in chart form to the most complicated, you know, with everything spelled out in detail, is on the National Liberty Alliance site. Okay, John, do you have anything to say?
Well, I just did. I'm amazed at the. I did not know about the different rules with the legislatures, and I'm particularly tickled by picking up a local representative and having him present the bill without a second. That is really powerful.
That is really powerful. Absolutely. Absolutely. When I first heard that several months ago, I thought, man alive. And then when I read it, I thought, whoa, this is really, this has got to get out there, because Robert's Rules is great as far as holding, you know, your local people accountable. But the stuff that they're doing in the townships and the cities and so on and so forth are coming directly from the state. Uses these manuals. And if you want to know, and I believe I have it in there, the parliamentary authority is one of the links that I have. And if you go to table 99-9.20, you will see what your state uses. And you're in Illinois, right? And you use, it looks like Robert's Rules. That's why you're, you know, quite familiar with those, probably.
Hey, Nikki.
Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead.
Are you saying that, like, your local town board has to use Robert Rules because they're, and the state legislator can use Masons?
Right. And remember, now, it does say in that, what I had just read, where did I get that from? Okay. But anyway, it says that there are municipal corporations. So therefore, they're in the private. So it definitely applies to them. I've got so many screens open here. Gerard, I'm sorry for the delay here. Let me go back to that.
Well,
Robert.
One thing is, I know that with the town board, when I was on it, they said, well, any resolution or law that the town board makes, when they make a law, because we can make local laws, they get sent up to the state. They have the same force as if the state legislator made them due to the home rule law. But what I'm wondering, and let me tell you what, they used to use that Robert's Rules to ram things through, especially when you had people on the board that didn't understand. Because until you get a handle on it, they can stuff through before you even know what's going on. And that's what they used to do. Because they'd get together before the meeting.
That's the purpose of our call tonight.
Yes.
Right. And they would discuss it beforehand. And then you'd be sitting there. I knew because I was a new guy and I didn't know. It took me a while to learn what the heck was going on. You know, before you know it, second, boom, 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 all in favor of Lou. And it was done before you even knew what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so Robert's Rules, they can be confusing, and they can play around where you don't get your second if they don't want you to either. So there's a couple of problems. What I'm thinking is if the town board can make laws that have the same force as the state legislators, why couldn't we use Masons if we wanted to?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm putting this out there because there's more than Robert's Rules, because there's parts of Robert's Rules, like you said, that can be used against the people, because if you are not part of that body politic, that corporation, basically, because all laws, it says right in here, all laws are contractual. So, you know, they were designed for civic groups. Robert Rules of Order, it says right here, were designed for civic groups and private organizations to deal with bylaws, motions, and resolutions. But resolutions are not law. So knowing the, you know, key differences in the words, too, and when there is a difference between public bodies and private organizations. In the public body, the powers do not reside in the members themselves. You're dealing with something quite similar to what we are here in this county, is that it's somebody's, you know, private corporation, you know?
Well, I don't believe they are. They can call themselves a private corporation. Look, they're representative. When you vote in a supervisor and a councilman, they're elected officials in the government. They're government officials, and they make laws. So, you know, they should not be considered a civic group or a private organization. You can't even, you know, they don't even ask, they don't put anything to referendum unless it's a special district. They vote on it. If it passes, it's law. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So I don't, you know, how can they go under a private organization? They're public officials elected by the people, and their laws go up with the same force as the state legislators. So I think, you know, you can make that distinction that a town board is representative government. Now, I know that Pennsylvania is a commonwealth. They're different than New York. And in Pennsylvania, everything has to go out to the people. Like when they do a budget, everybody has to sit there and vote on it. When we did a budget, it's that five board members. People can – you can open the floor up for comment, but the people have no say. They don't vote on anything. The only way they vote on something is if it's a special district that pertains to them, like a sewer tax or something like that. But,
I want to refocus back to the subject of tonight's call. Our homework assignment with the documents gives you a brief overview of all of the mechanics that all of these systems use. That was your homework assignment. Nikki's very, very astutely pointed out some of the differences between the systems, but we're going to get back to that.
Well, let me ask Gerard a question. Gerard, Now you say that these people are elected, okay? So if they are elected and they're probably members of the two major parties, you know, no doubt about it. Okay, so they're elected to office, and are they getting paid with constitutional coin?
Well, yeah, I guess you could call it, well, constitutional. Are they getting gold or silver? No, they're getting Federal Reserve notes.
Exactly. So are all laws contractual? So if you are accepting the contract to have them rule over, I mean, not rule over, but make the decisions, then with unconstitutional money, are you not hiring belligerents to, you know, rule over? I'm just, you know, putting that out there to have everyone start thinking a little deeper as to the adhesive and the unconscionable contracts that we have been entered into without full disclosure. Going right back to the 13th Amendment, which allows for voluntary servitude, with which if you do not comply, you're going to be duly convicted of a crime. And that is the Congress is made up of the reconstructed political bands. And the reconstructed political bands are the Democrats and the Republicans today. It was the Whigs and the Tories back in 1776, and back in the first century, it was the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So,
hey, I got a quick question.
Sure.
Just interjecting. This is Greg in Florida. Have you ever heard of Christopher Gorsuch?
He's didn't he get to be a Supreme Court judge?
No, Chris, he actually has a method of becoming a state citizen instead of a federal citizen by going through the State Department. And I just thought I'd throw that out there so you're not involved in the 13th Amendment anymore. Anyway,
well,
that's all I have.
Yeah, and you know, the way I look at it, and this is just the way I look at it, because the way I look at it is that I pledge allegiance to that flag, you know. I had trusted what they did, and to me, these are all adhesive and unconscionable contracts that they are putting on us, and they are a foreign entity compared to what it is that we were taught we had as government. These people are totally foreign, and they're judges are accepting payment in foreign coin as well as our legislators. So what we've been doing is we have been voting by proxy, or, you know, for proxies to represent the, you know, us in this corporation. So it's I'm just, you know, kind of putting it out there because I know a lot of people are, you know, filing papers and stuff like that to make themselves, you know, nationals and so on and so forth. If they want to do that, that's fine. However, this isn't going to get our country back. All this is going to do is just, you know, separate it from what should have been, because that second paragraph, as far as we hold these truths to be self-evident, it starts out, we hold these truths to be self-evident. What truths are they talking about? Is it the truths of the first paragraph? And if it's the truths of the first paragraph, then why isn't there a transition word? There was a lot of compromises, and Robert Bristow had put that onto the site, his site there, is that there were compromises that when the governments were being formed in all of the states, and, well, the U.S. government anyway, or the U.S. Constitution was being put together, there were compromises made. And one of the things with the Committees of Safety, and it was the Committees of Safety that brought forth that Declaration of Independence, and they left out the word because or although. It could be because we hold these truths. What truths? The truths of the first paragraph. It could say, a lot of people might have been thinking, although we hold these truths to be self-evident. We were created by, you know, a charter, you know, from the City of London or from the Crown. So there's a lot of doublespeak in our founding documents that has brought us to the point that we are today. And personally, from my perspective, I'd rather go after those adhesive and unconscionable contracts that have been set up rather than pulling away totally. And I mean, that's just where I'm coming from. But we're all coming together for the same purpose, and that's to, kind of do away with this unauthorized form of government that we currently have.
So let's refocus again back to these rules of order, because as members of the Committee of Safety, we need to know how to address these concerns in public bodies.
Go for it, John.
You've got all the documents, so, you know, why don't we cover a little bit about the basics of motions and the stuff that you would put up on the website so that we have some basics, so that our committees of safety know what they're doing when they walk into these meetings.
Are you, I think that you're probably more versed than I with this, so why don't you go ahead and latch on to that part, John, if you don't mind.
I've got to boot that up and dig out that document. I don't have the documents in front of me because of my internet connection. So it's going to take me, I hate to delay. All right, here we go. Wait, it almost came up. I have lots and lots and lots of problems with being attacked. So my tablet's not bringing it up. I had it queued. But basically, you know, you start out, the basic functions of a meeting is the meeting starts, the chairman calls it to order, the minutes are read by the secretary. That's your basics. This is a really good document, and I'm going to go through this. This is the rules of order versus principles. Rules of order can come as a religion of sort. As a meeting progresses, members can become obsessed with strict adherence to the rules while ignoring the principles that should guide their collective decision-making process. That's what I was mentioning earlier about intent versus letter. There is a need to shift the attention from rules to principles. Running a meeting exactly by the rule cannot by itself guarantee good outcomes for the organization. Principles should always come first. The hows and the whys. Rules are the hows of your collective decision-making process. For example, how is a motion handled? How is an amendment processed? On the other hand, principles are the whys and what fors. What are the desirable outcomes of a shared decision-making process? Why are certain rules followed, and what are they intended to achieve? In considering your collective decision-making process, there are substantive and process-related outcomes to understand. Substantively, the assembly should have in-depth discussions of issues. It should be guided by the good of the organization as a whole, which should have precedence over the interests of any individual or affiliated group. Well, we know where that goes. Guided by the broad organizational interests, the assembly should venture to make collective decisions which are wise and responsible and which serve the organization and its stakeholders both in the short and the long term. Every rule of order should have a principle which it seeks to uphold. When you examine a rule of order, you should be able to ask, why is it needed and what is it intended to achieve? For example, the requirement that motions be seconded is intended to promote the principle of efficiency. It is supposed to prevent the introduction of a motion if only one individual is interested in its consideration. Yet in reality, the requirement of a second does not work very well in advancing the principles of efficiency. Members often second motions out of courtesy, feeling bad for the proponent of the motion. Or they may second motions to have their names recorded in the minutes, not knowing that the name of a seconder should not be recorded in the minutes. And then it's procedural violations. Parliamentary authority, for example, Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised, the Standard Code, and others, as Nikki mentioned, give a great deal of attention to the intricacies of the Rules of Order for meetings. The question is, how realistic is it to expect that you'll go through a meeting without violating some rules? Given the sheer volume of the rules, the likelihood of violating some of them as you go through a meeting is very high. In fact, it is virtually a certainty. When was the last time you witnessed a picture-perfect meeting?
With that, the question is not whether you will violate the rules, but how to treat such violations. You will need, you will need criteria to determine whether a procedural violation is significant, and if so, what to do about it. There are two citations from the Roberts Rules of Order, newly revised. Page 243 says, in ordinary meetings, it is undesirable to raise points of order on minor irregularities of a purely technical character. If it is clear that no one's rights are being infringed upon and no real harm is done to the proper transaction of business. Now, this is key. This, I assume, is going to pose itself throughout all of these rules. It's clear that no one's rights are being infringed upon and no real harm is done to the proper transaction of business. And I hate contrarians that pull up nitpicky stuff that doesn't matter. So remember that. If it's clear that no one's rights are being infringed upon and no real harm is done to the proper transaction of business, that should be the criterion for any objection. The president should never be technical or more strict than is necessary for the good of the meeting. Good judgment is essential. The assembly may be of such a nature through its unfamiliarity with parliamentary usage, as Nikki very well explained, and its peaceable disposition, which we never see between the Democrats and Republicans, that strict enforcement of the rules instead of assisting would greatly hinder business. So what's the message? Stop the nitpicking and don't insist on a picture-perfect meeting, procedurally, that is. Just make sure that business gets properly done, members are included in the decision-making process, and basic rights are respected. This is really good stuff for our committees of safety. This is what I would hope all of you will be doing. Pay attention to the principles much more than the purely technical rules. There are two tests to determine the significance of a violation. Based on the first citation, here are the two tests which will determine whether a procedural violation is significant or insignificant. Is anyone's right infringed upon the violation? Is the violation causing any harm to the proper transaction of business? So that should be our guiding principle there. When managing or participating in a meeting, consider the rules of order as a means to an end and not an end in itself. If used well, rules of order should advance fundamental principles. They should help your group spend its time well and make good decisions on behalf of your organization and the people it serves. So don't let the rules become the master and the primary focus for the meeting. Always put the horse, the principle, before the cart. So that's all I wanted to read out of that. And the nuts and bolts, because we're short on time here, is I think most people are familiar. So you start, the chairman starts the meeting, the minutes are read, any old business is taken, any new business will be covered, and then you get into motions. And there's several different kinds of motions we won't get into, but basically you wish to discuss something, you put a motion before the body. Under the rules, it is possible that the motion will not be addressed at that time. I've seen that in a lot of public meetings. But by the rules, that's supposed to be addressed at the next meeting. Or you can put in writing at that meeting that you want it addressed at the next meeting. That's how you get around all of these local bodies ignoring you or sloughing you off. Those are the rules. So those are the basics that you should use in your own committee of safety, and these are the things that you're going to run into in public bodies. Nikki, you know, mentioned a very slick trick. You know, you got a committee of safety of five, and you walk into a very hostile board in a very corrupt area, and every member of your committee of safety is asked for time to speak, but you've already chosen one person, and that person's time has gone over. Committee of safety member number two says, I yield. Number three says, I yield. Number four says, I yield. Number five says, I yield. And your spokesman gets to say what needs to be said. That's pretty dang slick. So these are the things that we're trying to impart on you tonight with the Roberts Rules of Order or Masons, which I didn't know about, really good stuff. We have to know the rules in order to play the game. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to be a stickler. You don't have to get into this in a great detail. And you can do this simply as stated before. In your own committee of safety meeting, if it doesn't violate somebody's right to present something or it doesn't interfere with transaction of business, then ignore it.
So those are the things that I thought were very important tonight, that we get out, because when we start getting into the handbook, and a lot of that stuff is dry, and we're going to streamline it and skim through it a little bit, but you, in your meetings, when you set up committees of safety, when you discuss proposals and you're going to create a committee to go after fluoride in the water, or the school board or whatever, this is the process that you should be using to run a professional meeting. And that's basically the point of tonight's presentation. So with that, I yield. And if Nikki, if you want to follow up on that.
I do, because, you know, that was the primary thing on that post that I did, is the rules of order versus principles. And you can download, anybody who's on this call or who will hear it after, just go to the NLA website in the COS comments section. You'll see, excuse me, rules of order versus principle. And just go ahead and click that link, and you will be able to get the PDF that John just read from. Thank you.
Yeah, read these documents that Nikki posted. They're good documents, and they're easy to find. And you will do a great job running your committee of safety, whether you're, as the Edgar County watchdogs describe themselves, as hayseeds in Edgar County, Illinois, or you're dealing with the slick willies in downtown Chicago. You can run your meeting according to your needs, but yet still have the same rules.
And you will be respected for it within that community.
Oh, yeah.
It will not be argumentative, right? It'll be just following the rules that are set forth.
Right. I guess the point that Nikki and I had bandied about back and forth is not so much to get into the letter, but the intent, so that you can use the tools that we share with you in these calls to apply them any way you see fit that suits your needs in your local community. So we're basically giving you the tools. You can build whatever house you want. And that's kind of our intent in the way that we are making these presentations on these Committee of Safety calls. We're going to toss out the tools, but we want you to consider adopting them any way you see fit to work in your local community, because every community is different. Every community has unique personalities. Every community has unique stuff. There is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all. So what we're trying to do is just to kind of give you an overview so that you're not totally lost, and that you can, again, I repeat myself, but it's important, customize it for your own use at your own location. So that's what we're shooting for in all of this stuff. Thank you.
Any questions? Any questions? Comments? Will you come back next week?
Yeah, Nikki, this is Eric in Georgia. I was looking at this. I think I'm pretty sure we've discussed this before. I brought it up to you. Not specifically. I understand that. I totally agree that principles trump the letter all day long. But about the holding the truth to be self-evident, with or without a transition word, I don't understand how it applies to some charter. It seems quite obvious that it applies to nature's God. And a few pages, well, in my little handbook here, it refers, again, we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to the same judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. Now, that's clearly no charter to me. And also, if you know that Tom Jefferson was a disciple of John Locke, John Locke's not talking about any kind of charter. He's talking about God. So I'm wondering if you have some historical context for me so I can understand what you mean when you say there's doublespeak here that I don't see, and what charter it is that you're referring to.
Oh, what I'm talking about is the same thing I opened with, is that in these committees of safety, I'm going back to last week, I kind of piggybacked on what John had presented about the beginnings of the committees of safety, and pointed out that some of the people who were part and parcel of that committee of safety, or those committees of safety, were already stakeholders. They already had large plots of land, and they could care less which way it went as long as they continue to, you know, do business as usual. And they were here under the charters, and the creator, okay, the creator, the word creator in the second paragraph is what I'm talking about. The creator of the charters, fiction. Fiction is what I'm talking about. So
right,
does that help?
That does help. I see what you're saying, but for me, and just, you know, just
oh, I agree. I totally agree.
You know, you can put this all in plain English. What does that mean? That means that Rothschild sent Warburg to the United States in 1775, and he got together with all his cronies. Charter can be used as corporation. He got together with his corporation guys, and they did everything that was suitable to their corporations. Does that make it any plainer and clearer?
And they were entitled to do that under the corporations, the way corporations are. You can go back in Blackstone's law dictionary, and it talks that the city of London could not be dissolved. It's, I guess they tried to do it at one time.
So creator is the creator of the corporation, and the charter is the corporate bylaws. That's how you should be reading that.
Yeah, it,
okay,
it's
so
play on words. It's a play on words, Eric. It's not anything to, you know, to that I believe is right, you know, by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay, so let me just understand. You're saying that Warburg and his cronies used it as doublespeak, but Jefferson believed that he was talking about God.
Exactly. Yes, there were two types of people. And if you go back in British History Online, you'll find out that through the naturalization, the British passed laws for naturalization, and a Morris, and I can't think of what his first name was at the time, but like in the 1600s or early 1700s, maybe by 1715 or something like that, what they did is that all the Protestants that died, they simply naturalized after death. So in other words, they took their estates and everything else because now they became property of the British government. So it go back in British History Online and you'll see how they were operating and doing business. That was, you know, their God is mammon, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to double check on that. British History Online, do you have any specific links real quick?
Not off the top of my head here.
That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah,
it's
got a great search a search engine on it. You know, if you go to British History Online and just do the search for the years and who, you know, if there's a particular name, and look for specifically for the Americas and and you'll see that how the guilds play into it as well as the what do they call that? They call it the World Trade Organization now, but back then it was the Board of Trade and Plantations, I believe, that morphed into the Board of Trade, that morphed into the World Trade Organization. So they are, that's pretty much, you know, what it's all about. It's all about making money and bonding people. You cannot steal from a strong man unless you first bind him, right?
I'm going to jump in here because what we have done is we've gone into some very basic stuff on the rules, and we've gotten into some incredibly advanced class stuff on the subterfuge. So what I suggest, rather than chasing down bits and pieces from history websites, I have said this for years. If you want to understand the entire situation we live in today, every newspaper article, every radio broadcast, every journal or magazine article you have ever read is in a book that is the Cabal Playbook. It's called Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr, a Canadian naval flag officer. Save yourself a lot of grief. If you want to understand the world that you live in, that your grandparents lived in, and your great-great-great-great-great-grandparents lived in, everything that has ever happened on this planet in the last 300 years is in that book, Pawns in the game. It's available for free on PDF. You can Google Pawns in a Game PDF. It comes right up. You can download it and read it. It's about 215 pages. That is what I suggest because it's in simple terms. It doesn't get complicated. It doesn't overfocus on one particular subject, and it gives you the overview of what the hell happened and how we got where we are. It is the playbook. If your football team, Bears, has the Green Bay Packers playbook, they know what the hell's going on. This is a cabal playbook, and I've been screaming for years when we get into this kind of a discussion to read that book. It is so simple to read, and you will never, you will wake up the next day, and you will understand, and these discussions won't even come up. So with that, I yield.
And a point of information with that, if I could use Robert's rules here, point of information with that is that in there, it talks about the reign of terror, okay? It's exactly what's happening now with all this ISIS stuff and things like that. They're just doing the same thing over and over,
over
again.
And
the playbook
over
has
and
not
over.
Changed.
Nothing
yes, I
changed.
Love that book.
Nothing
I yield.
Well,
someone
Thank
was trying
you.
To speak.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you guys for tonight because very interesting, very informative, and every week we're growing in numbers.
Thank
and
you.
That's always good.
Yeah, and another good book I think is their playbook for the bankers is The Theory and Practice of Banking from 1892, the second edition, 1892, The Theory and Practice of Banking. And that is an excellent book as well because what it does is it outlines the history of how anything that wealth is anything that is marketable. So in other words, rights are marketable because our rights are our wealth. And it goes into detail about what these words really meant back then in the 1800s. They don't mean that anymore.
Yeah, but read Pawns in the Game first. Get the playbook
yeah,
first before you get into banking. Good book, absolutely right, but I suggest strongly, if you have not read this book, read this book.
Absolutely. I second that motion.
And it's free in PDF. I downloaded it to my phone, and I read it in bed for my cell phone. That's how I read it.
I actually bought it.
Ah.
Well,
many years
I'm kind of poor.
Many years ago.
But anyway, good call, Nikki. Very good job. Thank you so much. I learned a lot tonight.
I learned a lot, too. Thank you.
And do you know what we're going to learn next week?
Well, I guess we're going to actually get in. We're actually going to open a handbook.
Well, let me take a poll here. Let me take a poll here. What do you think is most important? You guys who have been working with the, you know, in the committees of safety out in the field, what do you think is most important in the handbook that really needs to be gone over?
Oops. Okay, I'm hearing a deafening. I didn't read it yet. Just like you didn't read your homework assignment for tonight, did you, Dave?
we expect to hear about the handbook next week, then.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, there's a method to the madness, and we needed to cover these rules so that you know how to run your committee of safety meeting and apply the handbook. So that was the thought.
Absolutely.
All right, well, very good. If there's nothing more, I'll go ahead and cut off the recording.
Right.